Most women's politics is just, don't be mean. Don't be in the Ku Klux Klan. And you're like, yeah, okay, we got that handled. I don't want Trayvon Martin to get killed if he's just going to buy Skittles. That's not what happened, but okay, yeah, we'll try. I don't even know why they vote.
Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Once again, we're recording in the radio studio because of the Chinese virus. So I appreciate your patience with us going through this. Don't forget to support us. Make sure you ring the bell and follow and all of that good stuff. I have with me a man that I have much respect for. I've been on his show before and it was amazing. Gavin McInnes. And he is an author, co-founder of Vice, and founder of Censor TV, censor.tv, and the host of Get Off My Lawn, and founder of The Proud Boy. He's a busy man. Gavin, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Father State.
Thanks for having me.
How have you been? I know you've been through a lot. How are you doing with all this?
Well, all that stuff, that sort of reign of hell ended when they put those last two Proud Boys in prison for 4 years. And then I think the attitude from the far left and the government was, all right, we got rid of that guy. That's enough punishment. So they seem to be leaving me alone. But, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm not still a target. Like my company, I've been banned from Twitter forever, but censor.tv just lost their Twitter account last week. And then yesterday, a fan page on Reddit was shut down. And as of today, you can't privately DM my URL to someone else. So although most of the hullabaloo has calmed down, there's still these tech issues where every time I put up something, that gets knocked down.
What does it feel like inwardly going through all this?
Well, you got to be brave. You got to keep fighting. And I'm Scottish, so we're comfortable with confrontation. We like fighting. But, you know, it was kind of weird yesterday when the Reddit got shut down, because the message from the left and big tech there is no one can appreciate you. So not only can you not have a voice, but no one can discuss your ideas. And that's kind of another level of fascism.
So what is it about you that there's such a major attack? Somebody want to stop you. What is it? What do you think it is about you that they want you out of the way?
Well, I'm charming and funny and influential, and I'm not really stuck in my views. I'm happy to discuss something and change my mind about stuff. So I'm not this sort of piece of granite that they can dismiss. I want to discuss things. And the problem with wanting an open discussion is that might pull people away from the left and towards Trump. So they saw me start Vice. They saw me invent hipsters. They saw me gentrify Williamsburg. They saw me create the Proud Boys. They saw that become a global phenomenon. They go, this guy has influence, so he's a threat. So let's call him a Nazi or a white nationalist or whatever, a pedophile, whatever is the taboo of the day. Let's call him that and get him sequestered.
So it's the left against the right.
Yep. And it's the left against the charming right. They don't care about Richard Spencer and David Duke. They don't care about people who don't have appeal. But like, if I could do to the Trump world what I did to hipsters and Vice, then Trump's going to win and they're going to lose. And that's, I'm saying, something they cannot accept.
Speaking of Trump, and I call him the Great White Hope, how would you rate him at this point? 1 to 10, 10 being best.
That's a tough call. I mean, everyone is an expert on this pandemic and how it has to be handled, and it's an unprecedented event. I think he did a great job. The allegation from the left seems to be that he didn't do enough. You were impeaching him then, and he was trying to shut borders down, especially from Iran, our patient zero, and you said, no, that's racist. So you were hampering him, and also, by the way, Nancy Pelosi and de Blasio, you were calling this the nothing virus and encouraging everyone to go to Chinatown at the beginning of all this.
Yeah.
So we all have our imperfections, but as far as how he's handling it now, I think he's doing a great job. And I think he recognizes that we've come to the point of the virus where it's buyer beware. So if you want to stay home because you're old, you have diabetes, we understand, but the rest of us, we're ready to take the risk. And I think Trump recognizes that.
Do you believe that the Chinese virus is as serious as they sad that it was, or that it is, or is there something else happening and we are not aware?
Something crazy is going on here, and it's all theories at this point, but I think the Chinese were developing bioweapons as a just-in-case, and it accidentally got loose. You know, they always talk about how we gave the Indians blankets with smallpox. That never happened. A general suggested it, and then another general went, I feel like we'd end up getting the smallpox, so let's just not mess with smallpox. I don't want to be making diseases as a weapon. The Chinese obviously thought otherwise, and they were messing with, I think it's very similar to SARS, and they were developing a more potent strain, and I think they didn't clean themselves well enough. Someone went to a wet market, boom. And there's really weird stuff too, like didn't 5 million people leave Wuhan before the quarantine?
Something like that, yeah.
There's only 11 million people in Wuhan. Half your country left? And why'd they go to so many Western countries? So I don't know. I don't know if this was an act of war or what it was. But I do know that quarantine was probably the safe bet. I think it was smart to do it. Why not? But eventually you have to, as Tucker Carlson points out, you have to gauge the pros and cons, the risk benefits. And right now we're getting to a level of poverty that's going to be more fatal than a pandemic. So let's get to work.
Well, I think that the government, once it get control of you, it doesn't want to let you go because they love power. They love wealth and they love power. And they get it by controlling the people. And now they have tested the people of this country and they see how much they can control the people. I don't imagine the government letting the people go all the way. They even, in some states or cities, they're trying to fine you $1,000 and if you don't wear the mask. And I can't, and the people are like really just doing whatever the government says. And that is like, that has to be good for the ego, especially the government's ego. And I can't see the government letting the people go totally anymore.
Yeah, when was the last time the government went, you know what, this was an expensive program and we don't really need it anymore, right. So we will be privatizing this entire department and laying off all these bureaucrats. I remember there was this guy, Thomas Friedman. He's a lefty at the New York Times, and he wrote a book called The World is Flat about how we're all the same and blah, blah, blah. But he wrote this column once where he said, I wish we could just be China for a year. Because this was when Obama was president. Yes. And he goes, we could be China for a year. Obama could enact all of his policies and then we go back to normal. But we would never have gone back to normal if we gave them that kind of power. That's what happened in Iran.
Yeah.
Right. The revolutionaries gave the Muslim clerics the power for the country. And then after the revolution, they said, OK, we'd like Iran back. And the clerics went, no, thank you. This is a religious state now. We're taking over. So you're right. It is spooky.
Yeah, it is. It feels so weird. I have always heard that China was a communist socialist country and that we should not trust them. But through all this, I'm literally shocked that the number of American businesses and the relationship that our country has with China. We're so into them. We've given everything over to them. Medicine, cars, whatever. They have everything. And now we need them and they don't want to help us. I didn't know how can America get so involved with your enemy like that? They know this China is our enemy. Why would they give their whole soul to the enemy?
Well, we were like frogs boiling in water and we didn't realize. But that's the good thing about this pandemic. The good thing is it's a great argument for nationalism. We've learned against our will about the importance of borders. And I don't think the average American, including me, by the way, realize that 95% of our pharmaceuticals are made in China. These are people who don't value human life, are totally devoid of ethics. They've got some of the worst human rights records in the entire planet. And we're telling them to make our drugs, to make our insulin for our diabetics. If you make fake insulin, which they often do, they'll often just, a chemist was telling me, they'll sort of spike the pharmaceutical so it passes a test, but that was just in that one particular test and the rest of it is garbage. If you give a diabetic placebo insulin, he's going to die. Like this, it's incredibly dangerous to give our enemies who have weapons pointed at us right now, the right to our medical health. It's insane. And now we know that.
So I know that Joe Biden and his son and all them all involved. Is it all about the money, you think?
Yeah, definitely. And it's ironic that the DNC is pushing Joe Biden. This is a guy who happily went to bed with China, did corrupt deals, made tens of millions of dollars. His son was a consultant for a mining company. His son's never dug a hole in the ground.
Right.
Yet him, and I think it was John Kerry's son or nephew or something, who was also making, you know, $30,000 a month plus all this stock interest, tens of millions of dollars. There's a lot of money in letting China run our lives, and politicians are almost as unethical as the Chinese. But at least it's been a wake-up call.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely a wake-up call. Do you think that there will ever, you know, I don't know the future, but do you think that there will come a time when it will be we the voters and not we the government again in America? Do you think we can take back the government, and then if the government doesn't keep its word, we can vote the people out and vote in people who will do what they say?
Trump is just a stopgap. I mean, he'll be gone in 4 years. I think the government is sort of like age. It's going to keep growing. All we can do is try to stop the growth. So you and I are growing old. We're going to die one day, but we can eat right and try to stay in shape, try to keep below 200 pounds and, you know, at least be healthy till we die.
Yeah.
But we're still getting older. So Trump is just like the government equivalent of going to the gym. After this pandemic, we're going to be in pretty good shape for 4 years, but we have to keep exercising and keep trying to shrink the government.
Yeah, I agree. I want to ask you one other thing about Donald Trump and the Great White Hope. I've been hearing a lot. There were a lot of young white guys who supported him in the beginning when he first ran, and they liked what he was saying about closing the borders and doing all those things. And even though I know there is a wall going up, because they don't see the wall going up, they don't believe that there is a wall going up. And they are mad at the president for supporting Israel. And so, and then now we have this deal where during this coronavirus situation, it's best to stop all immigrants, legal and illegal immigrants, from coming in right now on different visas and stuff like that. And the president said that he was going to do that, but now something happened and he's kind of temporary doing it for 60 days or something. I'm not sure how that's going. And then the young white guys are mad because hasn't done anything about censorship. He hasn't stopped that. And I've been trying to tell them that, you know, the president has a lot on his hands, and then he's fighting against people in the government who hate him. He can't even trust a lot of folks who work with him. What do you expect the guy to do? What would you say to those young white guys who are against the president at this point?
Well, you got to grow up, kids. I mean, there are some valid points. Ann Coulter's been really hard on Trump about the wall, and the wall could have gone up faster. We could have a lot more freedom with big tech. Big tech is getting all these allowances because they're basically treated like a utility, like water or electricity. Yet they're deciding who gets water and who gets electricity. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
And Laura Loomer has made incredible progress on fighting back against this. But it would be nice if the president would get involved and enforce some more free speech on big tech, who are controlling the national conversation. As far as Israel goes, I mean, hating Israel is a phase that all young 19-year-old men go through. It's up there with your Marxist phase and your Bob Marley phase. It lasts about 7 months.
Amazing. Go ahead.
They'll get past it. You know, you have to realize that Trump isn't perfect, but he's the best president we've had since Reagan.
Yeah.
And there's something about the right where they're not good at unity. The left is too good at unity, and the right isn't good enough. We're so easy to dismiss paleocons, hate neocons, hate libertarians, hate tradcons. And it's like, can't we all kumbaya and come together, at least until Trump's done?
Can't we all just get along? What can the president do to stop censorship? What can he do?
He can start saying, you know, denying them these special allotments they get, this special treatment they get, these tax breaks they get. He can say, look, if you're going to be a totally free market enterprise that censors random people, then you can't be treated like you're some sort of utility. You can't get these tax breaks. You can't get this special treatment. You have to – it's one or the other. And by the way, pardon the two Proud Boys that are in prison for 4 years for a fight with Antifa. Get them out of there.
I'm confused about the Antifa thing because Antifa seemed to be the radical, violent, out-of-control organization. They dress up in dark clothes. They hide their faces. And you know when everyone is hiding, they got something to hide. You know they know they're doing wrong. How did that switch where Antifa became the good guys and the guys who are going out standing up for what is right became the bad guys? Is it because Antifa said they are fighting against, what do they call it? They're fighting against fascists or something like that?
Yeah, I think it happened. It really went into overdrive with Trump, and the DNC essentially subsumed like a blob Antifa and took them in and said, all right, you're now the paramilitary wing of the DNC. In other words, you are the establishment. And you check out these kids and they have fathers who were in office. They have judges and lawyers who are their moms and dads. They are part of the establishment and they're free. You don't have to pay them. Yeah. They're ruthless. They're violent. They got an axe to grind. All Antifa asks from the DNC is make sure when I get in court that I'm immediately absolved of my sins and I don't even get parole. And they said, sure, no problem. Our judge is basically your dad. And poof. So they act like rebels who are anarchists who hate the government, but they truly are the government. They're just like they're Nancy Pelosi's henchmen.
That makes so much sense. I remember I used to work for a union, and I totally saw – at the time, I was a liberal Democrat, and I worked for a union organizer, and those things was happening, but I was too young to understand the danger of it. And I thought at the time that they were the friends of America, but now I realize they're the enemy of what is good. What can the people on the right do to become as one, you know, to fight in the same way the people on the left? What needs to happen so that we can, the people on the right can fight and stand together, even though we're not going to agree on everything, but when it comes to certain issues, we should be able to fight together and not against each other. What needs to happen for that to come about?
You know, you can't get into the quagmire. You can't tell Mike Cernovich to start appreciating Ben Shapiro. You can't tell, you know, Milo that Crowder is good for him or something. You can't convince those people. So my attitude is I just don't get involved in the bickering and the infighting. I don't punch right. And then I just plow forward. At the end of every show, I say, get fired, get in trouble, be brave, and never stop fighting. So I think the solution to all that stagnant noise of infighting is just to create your own music and push really hard for less government, for free speech, for the Second Amendment, for an open dialogue in this country. We really are at an unprecedented level of incuriosity and non-conversation. And this country was built on the opposite of that.
It's so unfortunate, too, because we're losing out on a lot of good stuff by not having open dialogues about anything. We don't have to agree on everything, but we should be able to talk about anything, speak about anything.
We don't know what's going on. There's a great scene in Mike Cernovich's new movie, Hoaxed, which I highly recommend. And the Black Lives Matter guy in New York is talking about Dylann Roof and shooting up the church. And Mike shows him the black guy who shot up a white church in the South. And he's never heard of that before. And he's staring at the article with his mouth agog, just like, whoa, I never heard of this. We're not hearing about things because big tech has successfully put us all in bubbles. And we can't hear what the other side is saying anymore. That's we come from a back and forth history here. Yeah. To go like this is not who we are.
When I tell my black family members, I'm black. When I tell my family members about the attack on white people from black people, how whites are under attack, how they're being robbed and raped and murdered and killed, and nobody cares, right? They don't believe me. They think I'm making it up because they have not heard it in the liberal media. They have not seen it. And so they think I'm making it up. And that is because it's a one-sided thing now. It's not openly. There's no open discussion and viewing of what's happening.
Jesse, if what they were doing to white farmers in South Africa was being done to dogs, they would send in the American military.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about white South African farmers, just say they're puppies. They're not boiling white kids alive. They're boiling puppies alive. That will get their interest. And then when you're done the whole thing, okay, just change dogs to white people.
I know what you mean, man. I am concerned that what is happening in South Africa, Mommy Africa, what is happening in South Africa is coming is coming to America, because I've noticed that white people are under attack, especially straight white conservative men, Christian men. They're the most hated species around the earth. And in this country, you have foreigners who are being voted in. You have the blacks who are being voted into office, and the women, and they're all against white people. They say black and brown, and they're leaving out white people, and they're getting into the government, and they're creating laws that goes against white people. And the white people are so nice. Oh, look at the blacks. They're just the blacks. They've been a slave. The blacks. And because of that, I can see them taking over. And once they get the real power, what they think is power, they're going to take away the white's land in this country. They're going to take away their businesses. They're going to murder, rape, and rob, and the cops won't be able to protect the whites. Do you see a possibility of that happening here in America?
I guess. But the biggest problem with this sort of segregation, this voluntary segregation, is it inevitably becomes anti-cop. And the next thing you know, you have this incredibly violent, lawless area where blacks end up killing each other. I mean, we're up to, what, 20 a day now? Look at the south side of Chicago. They said, we don't want white people here. Don't try to gentrify this area. And then they said, we don't want the cops here. And now it's got kill numbers that rival New York, despite being a fraction of the size. And I'm just talking about the south side. I mean, you have shootings in the south side of Chicago where it's like 25 people shot in one weekend. And I was talking to a military guy who was in Afghanistan. I said, what if 25 people were shot in one weekend? And he goes, that would become a thing that would be like on Wikipedia, the Battle of Kamrup Malak, when they were taking over that particular village. Like, it would be a historical moment in history. But in the south side of Chicago, it's just a bad weekend.
Our friends were telling me that the blacks in South Africa are killing each other and the whites. It's like everybody getting killed.
Yeah, that's the thing about South Africa. It's not black versus white. It's tribe versus tribe. And there's about eight tribes there warring, and whites are just sort of one of them. But the carnage is brutal on all fronts. I don't see this as some sort of like repeat of Zimbabwe or Rhodesia or South Africa. I see it as the death of meritocracy. I have no problem with the entire White House being black if everyone is there on their own volition, on their own merit. But when you start saying this has to be identity politics, like the school system in New York City right now is a complete mess because the head of it is just obsessed with more black and brown teachers. They're changing the curriculum to be all about white people being evil and racist. And it's just a lower quality education.
That's amazing. One last thing about the South Africa. This same friend told me that the murder rate in South Africa is as high as it is in our worst cities here in this country. So,
you know, you talk about the death of meritocracy. I was talking to a South African the other day who told me that the requirement for GEDs has been going down and down. It used to be you needed a 51%. You have to pass.
Yeah.
And now you need a zero to get a GED. You could be completely illiterate and you have a GED. You have a high school diploma. What? That means it doesn't exist.
That's amazing. I remember hearing that about the test in Ohio. I believe it was Dayton, Ohio. They had it where if the blacks wanted to be an officer, a police, or a cop, they would have to make a B or something. And the blacks couldn't pass. They couldn't make the B. They said, all right, blacks, if you can make a C, we'll let you in as a cop. They couldn't make a C on the test. They just said, all right, blacks, we love you. It's the blacks. It's slavery. If you can make a D on the test, for police to become a cop. They can do that. Now, if you just show up, you can be a cop. If you're black.
See, now that's racist to me because you're saying that they're not good enough. You have to handle them with kid gloves. You know, the FDNY does the same thing here in New York. There's a smoke room you have to go through with your training, which is brutal. And you're just walking through about 20 feet of just black smoke.
Yeah.
And black people said they hated it and it was really hard on their lungs. So they don't have to do that part of the test. And you go, but wait a minute, they're going to be in a burning building at some point. It's not a made up test. It's not like you have to eat a frog or something.
Right.
It's heaven. And you also have Asian kids being penalized here in New York for a secondary education because their marks are too high.
Yeah.
So they bring down the Asian, they bring up the black because they want to have a diverse college. I don't give a crap if Harvard and Princeton are 100% Asian. If they all earned it, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, the best bodybuilders are all big and muscular. That's just the way it is. We don't need skinny weaklings being the going to the Olympics.
That's right. I've been talking to my producer about that skinny weakling guy. Anyway, I wanted to ask a couple of things. Then I want to move on to some other stuff here. What is wrong with the blacks that they allow the white liberal whites and others to treat them as a second class citizen, as though they're not capable? Like with me, I like working for myself. I like earning it. I feel I've always been that because I was raised in that way. It's just something about taking on challenges and dealing with them and overcoming them. And that changed during the civil rights movement. What is it about the blacks today that they don't seem to mind being used in that way? There's no shame in it. At one time, it was they would never put up with that.
Well, lots of people do it. Women do it too, yeah. And it's a way to double your accomplishments. So when you say to a kid, you know, you're black and we live in a racist country, so you're gonna have to work twice as hard to achieve the same thing as a white person. I hate that kind of talk because it's very discouraging to that little kid. He's gonna say, well, why bother? I'm not gonna do twice the years of law school to become a lawyer.
Yep.
But another thing it does is it says to anyone who's accomplished something that they must have worked twice as hard. So if you have a corner store and it's functioning and it, you know, it pays for itself, it's profitable, and you sell fruit and chips and stuff, and you built it yourself, and someone goes, you know what? The fact that you're black means that this is twice the accomplishment because you had to fight against all that racism. So you're twice as good as the white guy who owns a corner store. And who isn't going to take that freebie and go, yeah, I did have to work twice as hard. And women do it too. They go, I was a top engineer at GE. And you go, oh, that's pretty good. And as a woman, it was especially hard for me because everyone didn't – and no one trusted a female engineer. So I'm actually more accomplished than any other engineer as a GE. And you go, okay, you just doubled your accomplishment. Congrats.
That's amazing. As you know, I grew up in Alabama under the Jim Crow laws and all that. I grew up on a plantation. I was born there. And I have to tell you, and I left there at 18. Between birth and 18 years old, I never heard – that America is a racist society, so you got to work harder. You can't. You got a white man trying to hold you back. I never heard any of that at all. And because my grandparents, I grew up with my grandparents, and my grandfather was a hard worker. He taught me how to help him on the plantation there from day one. And I saw by example to just do my best and be grateful that I could work. And we treated people the way we would like to be treated. Blacks treated whites this way, and whites treated blacks that way, and we knew it was good and evil, no such thing as racism. I never imagined that I couldn't make it in America because white people, until I moved to California at 18, I started hearing the so-called leadership say that, oh, you can't make it. It's hard on the black man. You got to work twice as hard as the white man. And I'm like, why would they tell anyone that unless they were trying to control them or something? It didn't make sense, and it still doesn't make sense to me.
I think if you hated black people, if you were the head of the Klan and you wanted to really cripple a child, you should say to him, it's horrible out there. If you go for a drive, a cop might just randomly shoot you. The Klan is on every corner. Yeah. There's hate groups. Everyone's Trump. You know, the president of the United States, he's a white supremacist. He thinks you're garbage. So now you have this black cloud of doom over your head. I was talking to a guy the other day. We actually had him on the show. And he said when he was – the way he was raised – and he brought up an interesting point I'd never thought of before. He said our fathers tend not to be around, so we're just with our mother. But our mother had us when she was like 16, so she's not much of a mother. So we tend to be raised by our grandparents. Our grandparents grew up, you know, pre – Jim Crow, like pre-MLK assassination, like in another America.
Right.
So they have this antiquated view of America. And he said, I would have nightmares about the KKK. I would be scared of them coming to our house. They traumatized me. Then he joined the army and everyone, he was in Afghanistan and everyone was just like trying to stay alive, and he realized, oh, we're all in the same boat here. And he only stopped being scared of white people when he was about 20 years old. But I got laughed at for saying this on an interview the other day. They were saying, so you think racism is over? And I go, yeah. And they said, when? When did it end? And I never really thought of a date before, but it's like you say, what, Jim Crow was 65, MLK was assassinated in 68. I think around then, America went, okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. What the hell's going on? You killed Martin Luther King? All right, I'm done with this. Let's stop. It's no longer just drinking fountains. This is getting serious. End Jim Crow, and let's start being civil to these black people. And I, of course, there was uprisings, and there was good days and bad days. But for the most part, 1970 is when America went on track for equality, and it's been improving every year. People ignore that. It's been improving every year, and 2020 is the least racist it's been since 1970.
Amazing. Do you know that when I look back on it, growing up in Alabama, I used to walk the roads at night, and we didn't have street lights and all that. I used to ride the horse to see my girlfriend. She lived in Russell. You ever rode a horse to go and see your girlfriend?
No, I hate riding horses. It hurts.
You have not lived until you get on a horse to ride across to another county to see your girlfriend. She lived in Russell County. I lived in Barber County, and I had to ride and come home late at night. You couldn't even see where you were going, but the horse knew the way home, so he would take you home automatically. But
that's so romantic, Jesse. Your girlfriend hears like the blum, 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 blum. A hero is coming.
Here come my hero. But I want to say, not one time do I ever remember seeing a Klansman. The only time I would hear about them was on TV or something. And I've heard about them more in the city here since I've been living here than I did when I was growing up in Alabama. I didn't see anything about, I didn't hear them or see them. It's like they were everywhere, and I never saw them, and I don't know anyone who ran into them. So I don't know how the Klansmen and all that became so popular in the city, but not in Alabama.
Yeah, it's you know, I read about a girl recently who said there's a Klan meeting in my university. I can see them talking. And of course, the university goes, what the hell? We don't want that. I didn't sanction this. So they go and investigate, and they find the room, and it's a lab, a chemistry lab, where a microscope had a white dust cover on it that looked pointed and white. And this woman thought that was a Klan hood, and there was some sort of meeting going on. I mean, we're so paranoid. There's such a massive demand for hate. Like the SPLC, that's how they make money, yeah. Right? That whole story, oh, they ended the Klan. No, they sued the Klan for killing a black kid. The Klan only had $57,000 total. So they gave that to the mother. And then using a picture of that black kid, the SPLC went on to raise another $9 million for themselves. Not a penny went to the mom. On the basis of the Klan is out there killing people. It's made them hundreds of millions. You know, the SPLC was started because it sounded like Martin Luther King's group, the Southern Baptist Leadership Council. And a lot of people were just writing checks to the SPLC by accident. And they continued that grift till today.
Those who don't know, the SPLC is the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's what they call themselves. So my other question then, I got to move on, man. This is so good. How does it feel being a white man and so hated only because you're white? not because you did anything wrong, but simply because you're white and you're male. What does that feel to walk around in America knowing that you hate it because you're white?
It pisses me off, and I don't tolerate it for 1 second. I don't tolerate any of this when they say white boy or anything. You nip it in the bud. It's sort of like prison. If you have a lot of stuff from where you buy your chips? Commissary. You got a lot of commissary in your bunk, and someone walks by and is looking at it. Immediately, you have to go, you all right? You okay? You like my ramen? You're staring at my ramen? You can go get your own ramen. You got to really get right at it. I saw there's this, and it's especially bad from white people.
Yeah.
Like there's this comedian, Chris D'Elia, who has a special on Netflix, and he says, there was this guy at the gym, this white pasty guy, you know, those kind of guys, and everyone's laughing and clapping, all white people. He was so pasty that if you slapped him, it would leave a pink mark, you know, F that guy. And everyone's clapping. And then he says, I went up to him and I said, why are there vampires at the gym? And then everyone laughs and claps at the stupid white man. If he had said that about a black person, there was this black guy at the gym. Yeah. He was so black. He looked like an eggplant. You slap him and it leave a purple mark. I mean, there'd be a riot.
You're so right about that. I have proven, and you can prove me wrong, and we'll still be friends. I have proven that there is no such thing as racism, sexism, homophobiaism, Islamophobiaism, deadbeat-dad-ism, white supremacism, anti-Semitism. There is no ism. And there's no such thing. Racism has never existed. I never heard that word until I moved to the city here in Los Angeles. But there's no such thing as racism. That it's a made-up word in order to control the people.
Well, I come from Quebec, where it's about English versus French.
Right.
And it's literally illegal to have an English sign if it doesn't say French bigger. So if you have Joe's shoes, then Chaussure de Joe has to be twice the size. And there's language police who will photograph your sign and penalize you. And if you're black and you speak English, then you're on the English side. If you're black and you speak French, you're on the French side. So I came down to New York City in 1999, and there's all this racial stuff. They're like, what? We're all English. Who cares? How is this a thing? It's almost like people need a thing to war about. But if there is racism, it is the thinnest, tiniest layer, like oil on the top of water. And all it takes is this, and it's gone. If you meet some old racist Archie Bunker guy, and he goes to a bar, and this guy, he said racist stuff, racist jokes. He loves the Mets. He loves BLTs. And he hates toothpicks. And he sits down and he can't see the black guy. And the black guy's like, this was going to be our year with the Mets. And now, because of this damn pandemic, we're not going to shine. Where they screwed us. Oh, good. My BLTs here. I love these. I love when it's nice and toasted, too, with the mayonnaise. Don't you? You think that white guy's going to turn around and go, well, I kind of wanted to talk to this guy because we have so much in common. But he's a Negro. So there's no – people are too selfish. They want to talk to people. Same with the business. If a business finds its accountant, it's going to save them 50 grand a year. You think they're going to go, well, you could make our company a lot of money, but you're a Negro.
Right.
No way. I'm going to deny myself that interesting conversation or that lucrative accountant because of some hang up.
Yeah.
Bull crap.
Well, no such thing as racism. And it's either right or wrong, good or evil. And that our battle is a spiritual battle, a battle between right and wrong. And there are wrong people in all races and culture, right people in all races and culture. And it's a battle between that, right and wrong. And that's what we were taught, and that's what we knew growing up. And so I never heard the word racism until I moved to Los Angeles and the so-called black leader was pushing that idea that it was about race. But we knew growing up it was about wrong or right. That's why we knew there were decent, good white folks, there were decent, good blacks, and there were bad ones on both sides. We never saw it as a race thing until I got here. So that's why I can tell you this whole thing about racism is a lie. It's good or evil, right or wrong. Even when I was growing up, my grandparents wouldn't let me go play with bad children, and they were black. If the parents were no good, they knew the kids would be no good, and you could not play with them.
Right.
And it had nothing to do with race.
Yeah, it'd be dangerous. Look, I have plenty of hate in my heart. I hate guys who order blackberry margaritas. It takes the bartender like 10 minutes. We're all waiting for our beer, and you've got him shaking away there. I hate guys who wear flip-flops, no matter what race they are. I don't want to see your hairy toes on the train. Get them out of my face.
Oh, God.
I hate people who ride scooters with a little helmet on. Ooh, you're going to bump your noggin if you fall off your little children's toy? I got plenty of prejudice, but basing it on someone's race is just petty.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really happen.
I know. We got to change that. I got to ask you about your magazine. You had a magazine called, you started a magazine called Vice. What was Vice about, and is it still in operation?
I left in 08. I don't know if they still publish the actual hardcover tangible magazine. I know they definitely – the magazine industry is dead. So if anyone's putting out a magazine, they're just doing it as a vanity project or a way to advertise their brand. But if you look at political correctness, it started in the early 90s. I mean, it started decades ago. But as far as really oppressing people and destroying education and brainwashing people into being lesbians, it started in the early 90s. And so did Vice. We pushed it back. And when we got to New York in 2000, we were about smashing political correctness. We were as offensive as possible. We had things about I hate conservatives. We had things about I hate liberals. We had, you know, fun facts about slavery and talked about how there was potentially more white slaves than black slaves, all kinds of taboos. It was across the board taboos. And I feel like we successfully pushed back PC from 2000 to 2005. But it's a Sisyphean task. And it's like holding a ping pong ball in the air with a fan. It's just eventually, as soon as you blink, the ping pong ball is going to hit the ground again. And although we kept it back to 2005, 2006, it came back around then with a vengeance. And the past 15 years, it's just been like a steamroller. And I think Vice got subsumed by it too. They got sucked into that machine and they started writing about how white people are gross and how all black people are lovely puppies and they give bear hugs.
Amazing. That is too funny. What brought you moved to this state from Canada? Am I right?
Yes.
What brought you here to America from Canada?
Well, Vice. I mean, we were the thing about Canada is it's such a small country when you look at the population.
Yeah.
And if you're big in Canada, you're big in Canada and you hit the ceiling. Plus, it's a very socialist place. So they don't really encourage growth. It's not cool to be an entrepreneur there the way it is in, say, New York City. So we said, if we're big in Montreal, we're big in Canada. If we're big in New York, we're big in the world. So we moved to New York, and then we started opening Vice UK, Vice Scandinavia. We opened up Vice Japan. And by the time I left, we had head offices in every city in the world. Not every city, but all over the world. And it was a fun, irreverent magazine based on skateboard punk rock culture, but being provocative and weird and nonconformist.
I have.
But you can only do that for so long.
My producer is from Canada, Nick, and he's an anchor baby, and he has the same drive. He remind me a lot of you, because he has this drive. He's in America, and he has a good attitude, and he has this drive. You know, he would try anything really, but he has that same drive, and I don't see that in a lot of men today, young men at least.
Well, it's also expats, right? Like I always tell girls if they're single, try to marry an immigrant. A Western immigrant probably would be your best move. But if they managed to get here, they had to do a lot of struggling to do it. So an Australian in New York City is a valuable commodity because besides the annoying accent, he had to work his ass off to get there. So you should scoop him up because he's got a drive. But maybe it's because Canadians who don't have a drive froze to death. So we genetically ended up with a workaholic culture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he has it, and I'm really happy. I want to ask you quickly, the left, the people on the left are able to create the internet, Google, and all those things. They're very creative. Why are there people on the right who are as smart, as talented, and create their own thing, because the left, they're against us, and they're not going to help you get the truth out there. Why don't we start creating on the right?
Yeah, that's a good question. But I think a lot of these people go left when they become billionaires because they get out of touch. they also tend to get married and they marry divorced, and then they marry a trophy wife, and she wants to have the fun dinner parties with all the artsy fartsy types, and they're liberal. So look at someone like Howard Stern or Jimmy Kimmel. They grew up not very political, not very left, kind of almost right wing, and dangerous and controversial, anti-SJW. Then they got divorced, married young, politically active women who want to go to fancy dinner parties, and all of a sudden they're the most liberal people alive. Was Bill Gates liberal when he made his computer Windows? Was Steve Jobs liberal when he was in the garage making the computer? No, they were just nerds. But there's something about being rich that gets you out of touch with the working man, and it turns you into a really irritating liberal, which is covered beautifully in Charles Murray's book, Coming Apart.
Amazing.
Where he says there's something about the elites that turns them into brain dead liberal zombies.
Amazing. Do you miss the Proud Boys? I know you resigned from being the head of the Proud Boys. Do you miss that?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I said that so it would help them in court, but I still talk to these guys all the time. The New York chapter has been completely shattered by the FBI. The meeting place has been shut down. They bugged all our phones. So those guys are just shrapnel now, who meet at secret dinner, have this secret dinner club where they'll meet at a restaurant. Even Max and John in prison now are being interrogated about when's the next New York meeting. It's like, you guys wrecked the whole thing, but it's still strong all over the rest of America. Canada, Britain is huge. And I visit those guys. I still go to Westfest every year. So I do what I have to do. I'll avoid them in public if it helps this case. But after Max files his appeal, I'm just going to go back to wearing my black and gold Fred Perry. I don't think absconding my throne, I'm not sure it did any good. They still went to prison for 4 years.
I read that you were married to you were a liberal at one time, which is hard to believe, but maybe that's why you're such a good conservative, because I used to be a liberal as well, and God forgave me, and I overcame it, and I'm a really fighter on the right. You were married to an Indian lady or something?
She's American Indian, yep. My kids are members of the Ho-Chunk tribe, but my wife is like most women. They're not really political. Uh-uh. Like, if you're really political, what should states' rights be with the Second Amendment? What's the capital gains tax? What do you think that should be? The H-1B visas, how many of those should we issue? That's what politics is, really. It's a bunch of numbers and accounting, and that women tend not to be interested in that. Most women's politics is just, don't be mean. Don't be in the Ku Klux Klan. And you're like, yeah, okay, we got that handled. I don't want Trayvon Martin to get killed if he's just going to buy Skittles. That's not what happened, but okay, yeah, we'll try. I don't even know why they vote. So it doesn't really come up. Plus, when you're married, your political differences are totally irrelevant because you have these kids bonding you. So it's like you're a baseball fan and you own the Mets. Well, now you're focused on the Mets, not who's a vegetarian and who's a meat eater. That's irrelevant. There's much bigger fish to fry.
That's right. What is a man?
A man?
Besides the physical part, we know that. Unless you had them taken off, you became a transgender. But what is a man?
A man stands his ground. A man is a handshake guy. A man, when he gives his word, people go, whoa. And they don't even need a contract after that because he's never gone back in his word. A man gets married, stands by his wife through thick and thin, is a disciplinarian in the home. And if that means the kids don't like him, that's fine. You can either be friends with them when you're young or friends with them when you're old. But the important thing for a man is to convey his legacy, to have kids, and then convey his legacy to his children. And a big part of your legacy is character. You know, money is fleeting, fame is irrelevant, but character is what counts. And I want my sons to go, oh my God, Dad shook his hand and said, you have my word to that guy. That means it's going down.
That's how it
no
was.
Matter what.
That's how it was.
My dad made a promise.
And what
my dad makes a promise that's set in stone.
Yeah, it was like that when I was growing up. What is love?
Love is why we're here. We're here to procreate, and God has imbued us with this strange instinct that gets deeper and deeper. When you're with a woman, like when I'm with my wife, our marriage has evolved, and the love we have now is so much more intense because it's sort of a collage of all the previous versions of our marriage. It's the same with kids. Like, you'll have a funny little 2-year-old who says funny things, and that 4-year-old doesn't even look like him when he was 2. And then when he's 10, you know, he likes basketball and stuff, and that's totally different. But you love him because you love all those iterations of your son. And I feel the same way with marriage. And that's the reason that we stick together is because of the kids and everything. But it's also this gift that God gave us, which is love, which is this perpetual motion machine that doesn't require gasoline to run this engine. It just runs. And when you say you hate someone, by the way, that means you think of them as much as you think of your wife. So you probably don't hate them unless you think about them 50 times a day.
Yeah.
But love is the grand force that keeps us all fighting. It keeps us all brave. It keeps us all alive. And it keeps us all reproducing and making families. That's what this is all about.
So are you a Christian?
I am a Catholic,
yep. You're Catholic. That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's new too. I grew up atheist. My parents are atheists. But when my daughter was born 14 years ago, I got sort of overwhelmed by this incredible miracle with her little lungs that work and her nose that looks like mine. And my toe is sort of – my big toe is kind of separate from my other toes, and that's what her foot looks like. And I was just so overwhelmed. I realized that this miracle is part of a bigger plan.
That's amazing, man. No wonder,
yeah, it was,
no wonder you're so amazing.
I cry in church sometimes. I just get so overwhelmed by all the gifts that God gives
yes.
us. And the fact that we have so many ingrates that can laugh at the universe and laugh at America and laugh at all the progress we've had and laugh at all the gifts we're given is just shocking. We're a bunch of spoiled brats.
Yeah. One last thing about that, and then I got to quickly put you on the hot seat. But before we go there, do you feel wounded at all on all the stuff you've gone through? I was watching some of your videos last night. And you've gone through a lot. I saw that you were thrown out of CPAC and all kind of stuff. And you end up staying at a hotel in the ghetto. And that was too funny, man. So from back then until this day, do you feel wounded? Or what is that feeling coming through all that?
Well, I don't mind fighting. I box every day. I go step in the ring, get punched in the face. If someone gets me good, I say good punch. It's part of my DNA. But when they attacked my family, that was another... a new level of low, a new basement to dwell in. They did it in South Africa in 1800 with the British. They came down, and the Boers were winning against Churchill and the boys. And then they started burning down their homes and killing their wife and kids. And that's when the Boers threw in the towel and said, okay, you can have South Africa. But when the Brits did it to the Americans and they started burning down their homes, the Americans got more pissed off and eventually beat the English out. So it was definitely wounding me to see like my daughter's social life get affected and my wife be terrorized to the point that where she was delirious, my children not get invited to birthday parties and all this petty crap. That did wound me. It did piss me off. But unlike the Boers, it didn't make me want to throw in the towel. It was more like the Patriots, and it made me want to fight even more.
Right on.
So I'm wounded the way a bull is wounded when you throw a spear at him. I'm mad.
Right on, man. So I got to throw you on the hot seat, and I need you to answer these. We got to heat it up, Gavin.
The hot seat.
Here we go. Have you ever told a woman she's fat?
I have told fat women they're fat, and I take it a little further and go, not only are you fat, you're dying.
Will Trump's presidency kill political correctness?
No. It seems to have made them more angry. It's like Jim Goetz said to me the other day. He goes, can you believe we won? It sure doesn't feel like it. They get more bratty the more you impose freedom on them.
Have you ever gone vegan?
Yes, I tried vegan. I was a vegetarian for 15 years.
Wow.
And I was part of being an anarcho-punk kid who hates the government and doesn't trust anyone. I think there's an argument for it, but... everything's become political now.
Yeah.
So now your diet means something. This pandemic has a political stance behind it. Even if it rains outside, people make that about climate change and everything. We've politicized everything down to our boogers.
Who was your biggest childhood crush?
Bailey from WKRP. I think there's two types of girls that you like in the world. There's the Lonnie Anderson from WKRP, but I was a Bailey guy, and I still think she's the hottest woman on that show.
Amazing. And can a two last ones. Oh, a couple more. We got to move faster, man. Are you the head of your wife?
Yes, I'm the boss of the family. There was one exception, though, where she voted for Hillary, and that was a huge fight that lasted probably a week of me sleeping on the couch. And my argument, her argument was, I have my own facility, I have my own rights, I have my own life, and I have my own political beliefs. You don't control that. But my argument was, if we were going to move to, say, Denver, right, it would be a discussion we'd all have, we'd all work it out, we'd all be on the same page, then we'd move to Denver. Electing a president is the country moving in a direction. Yeah. So we should all be on the same page with that. So that was the only time I didn't put my foot down and have a major war, because it could have been the end of the marriage. But otherwise, I'm the boss. I say when we move, when we buy a car, what vacation we're going on. But we usually agree on everything. So it's a benevolent dictatorship.
Can you be a moral person without God?
Yeah, it's conceivable, but you're missing the big picture. You know, it's like a marriage without sex. Like, what are you guys doing?
Who is your favorite comedian?
Louis C.K.
What would be the biggest change to our world from coronavirus situation?
I think you touched on it earlier. The government has tasted power. Yeah. And it's like a vampire tasting blood. This is going to be very dangerous in the future for our rights, because they've seen how easy it is to put us under house arrest.
Yeah. Is the earth flat?
Yeah. If you have a pet rat, they don't bite you if you only feed them vegetables. But the second they taste meat, they'll start biting you from that day forward. And the government's going to start biting us.
So is the earth?
Oh, is the earth flat? No.
No. And the last one, is there a race war going on in America?
There's definitely a lot of identity politics, and there's definitely a lot of talk about anti-black racism. There's a lot more anti-white racism, but as far as like people on the street, when you walk outside, no, race isn't a thing. It consumes our media. It consumes our social media. It's talked about in political speeches. It's in every movie. It's in every stand-up special. But as far as like you and I walking down the street, like, imagine you and I walk down the street and someone going, "Hey, why are you hanging out with that Negro?" It's unfathomable.
I know. Thank you for sitting in the high seat, man. Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was a good time. I always love coming on your show.
Thank you so much. Tell the folks how they can get to your show and whatever you're doing so they can keep up with you.
I'm still hanging by a thread on YouTube at Gavin McInnes, but the only place you can see is at censor.tv. Instagram, Twitter, PayPal, Pinterest. I'm banned from everything. You can't even write this URL in a direct message. You can't put a picture of my face on Instagram. It won't mount. So I'm stuck with my pirate ship that I built, and it's the last place to see me.
That's amazing, man. Well, God is with you, and it's all going to work out. It's going to be amazing, and I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thanks, man. It was a pleasure doing
it. Same here. Thank you so much. And to the Fallen State folks, thank you. Don't forget to check out Patreon. Click on the Patreon link in the description, point down, to support our work, all right? We do appreciate it. We absolutely appreciate it. All types of merch and all that. Let me hear from you, folks. I appreciate it.
Next time on The Fallen State.
You believe that women are logical?
Don't you find me to be quite logical?
You seem more logical today than you did on Tucker Show.
I'm always logical on Tucker Show.
So let me ask, do you know any logical women?
I do know quite a few logical women, but I know men that aren't logical.
Can you name one logical woman other than you?
Well, Jerry Laybourne, she ran Oxygen Network with Oprah Winfrey. She was very logical. Dorothy Height, who stood next to Martin Luther King, very logical.
Was it hard for your husband to deal with you?
Well, he tried to kill the children, so that was fun.
Your husband tried to kill the children? Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.